keep going.
We just missed recording a little diatribe on Nike and and Apple. Wish we'd gotten that one down, but we missed it. So
it's okay.
You can't always catch lightning in a bottle, Michael. You can't always catch lightning in a bottle.
I know. I was just mentioning that, anyway, sometimes I put on the audio recording of Shoe Dog in the first 100 or so pages, just because it's such a great story, man. So inspiring.
Where we get inspiration from, that's what this topic, that's what our topic is about today, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, as I said to you, I sent you the notes around this episode. We're going to talk about the women's 10,000 and 5,000 events in our continuing series
mm-hmm.
on Let's Make Michael a Track Fan. And this is, these two events are the events I am most inspired to view at the Paris Olympics in 2024. The women's 10 and the women's 5. Not that I'm not going to care about the 15 or the marathon, I will, but these two events are, this is the highest form of the art of distance racing and strategy is being played at the highest level by the greatest practitioners we've ever seen. And it's something I don't think has ever been seen in the distance running world ever. This level of quality competition, quality stars, and the energy around the events. And we'll break that down in a much more concrete way. But it's a really, really beautiful thing. And so hopefully I can curb my enthusiasm a bit. Well, we'll see. We'll see how much curbing I need to do. But I'm glad that you know, for our listeners, let's just catch them up to speed real quick. Mm-hmm. We're doing a series trying to get Michael to be a fan of the sport. First one was a success. He enjoyed it. And the feedback I've gotten around that episode has been really good, Michael.
Oh, really?
More feedback than I normally get around mm-hmm. episodes. Maybe it's because when I did the Running Rogue podcast with Chris, we used to cover this stuff, and maybe the people are missing that from me. But there's others who are like also interested in the sport, but not really quite fans yet. But also people who are fans who want to hear the perspective of someone like you who they have, because they have people in their lives they know would love the sport, but they don't know how to share it in a way.
That's exactly the way to articulate it. It's like, I want to talk to Rory about his, about what he does, what he did on the track. Like, it's all, I mean, you know what I mean? But I don't know how to level with these athletes. Like, I don't know how to talk shop with them.
You don't have all the references, the references that people are going to be using in a conversation,
mm-hmm.
and having them really helps.
Mm-hmm.
You're not necessarily knowing the people, but just that there are kinds of racing styles and the way the races play out,
yeah.
and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this project is. I just want to note one of the athletes that I work with who's especially excited about this series. Shout out to Sarah Hines. She'll smile when she hears that. She said to me, it would be really, really useful if I could see these races. And what I said to her is, they are in the show notes. So I last episode,
oh, cool.
and
put
in
all
this
the
episode,
ones that you put for
I just
me.
Copied and
yeah.
pasted that document that I sent to you. I'm copying and pasting and putting in the body of the show notes. So anybody that wants to can go there and link. And what these links are both the links to the races. Sometimes they're the long race. Sometimes they're just a short version of it, depending on the race.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't, this stuff was written usually somewhere between 8 and 10 p.m. on nights of the week that I'm, after my wife and daughter go to bed, I can stay up a little bit longer and get a little more work done. So they're not like exhaustive or absolute or like the definitive statement on these things, but they're a good video so you can get a flavor and feel for the race and the personalities. Mm-hmm. And then a summary from Wikipedia, which is crazy good for giving you the high level details of not the drama that happened, but just the stats.
To this day, I don't know, on an aside, I don't know who writes these things.
For Wikipedia?
Yeah.
The public.
I understand that, but why are they so...
Because they're fans.
Well done.
They love it.
But they're all well done.
Because there's a because there's a style. There's a style. The people who do it know what they're doing, and they stick to it, and then they also police it.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's like a very well policed forum.
Because it is very comprehensive. And it's
very.
It's like,
and doesn't give you, it has the spoilers, but it doesn't tell you, like, it doesn't give you the heart, the beating heart and the sweat of the race. It just gives you the details.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. So then you can watch the race and then be like.
It never says it was a good race.
No, it doesn't. It just says, it doesn't. It just gives you.
There was a race. This was the time.
Totally. It's like not journalistic. Mm-hmm. It's much more just straight up, which is really cool. It's a really good juxtaposition of having the video and the Wikipedia.
Yeah,
so,
agreed.
So that's a resource for everybody who wants to either do that before listening or if they want to pause it and do it while you're listening or do it afterwards, regardless. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to do justice to this event group, to these ladies. The other thing I wanted to note was, as Sarah and others have said, they really wanted, I stated that we were overly focused on the men in that first episode, but then I intuited that I said that maybe we would skip the women, but the women in my life who care said, no, please cover this because, it's as good, and so that's why we're doing it. We're revising our initial statement. We're going to do the women's 5 and 10 today, and because it is so cool and so amazing. So just all that, just as sort of setup.
Yeah, watching the races, the women, there seems to be a different approach to the competitive aspect of what the race entails. In an unrelated distance, related if you take the athletes. We just watched, you know, Hellen O'Beary win the Boston Marathon. It's just interesting to even watch that pack of women run their
women.
Race.
Yeah.
And I was just saying before, like, we can get into it in the episode, but when you watch the race replays, there's something, there's a completely different energy that surrounds the race, and it's as intense as the men's race, but it's different how they work in conjunction with each other, whereas the men are clearly wanting to step on each other's faces and take position and do all this. The women don't seem to, they're much more involved in, how do I explain it? And you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the goal seems to be to win, not to beat somebody else into the point of, like, you know, wearing them out in a certain way. They're all kind of working together until it really matters, and then they're all kind of seemingly interested in, but I don't want that to sound like I'm delineating between the women's ethos and the men's ethos. There's an energy that's different in it, and I find it fascinating. I find that the women's races are maybe, you know, it's a true sense of, it's like they have a lot of respect for their field. I don't know what that means. I'm trying to figure out what I'm watching in this.
Well, all I can say is that is extremely insightful that you picked that up, because it is unique. It has always been unique in the women's sports, but it's especially unique and intriguing now because of the depth of talent and the level of performances we're seeing. I think what we're seeing with the women is, as I stated earlier, the greatest practitioners of the art operating at the highest level, and they all know it. Mm-hmm. And they know they're in a special time. They know, whereas the men, they've been a part of a 100-year-long tradition in their events, where there have been these ongoing competitions between nationalities.
They're also racing against history, maybe?
History. They're racing against country. Yeah. They're racing era against era. They're racing for all the spoils, or they're racing for the accolades. And the women are racing in a way that they're like, no one has, as explorers, as you like to say, expeditionaries, mm-hmm. no one has ever been where they're going. And in the men's races, yes, we've got this idea of, like, fast times, and, you know, even on the women's side with Gide and others, they're really trying to run fast. But when we get to the World Championships, when we get to the Olympics, and our focus especially in 2024 in Paris, you're going to be watching these women stand there shoulder to shoulder, as you stated, with deep respect and a recognition that if they blink, if they no one is. When we get to the women's 15, there's a clear leader. There's a clear, you'll see, there's a clearly a person who's better than everybody else.
Okay.
But on the in the 5 and the 10, that is not true. And it could be a 1500 meter runner, it could be a marathoner, and these women are running the 1500 and the marathon in some cases. Mm-hmm. Even we don't even some of two of these athletes, we're not even sure if they're going to be in the 5 and the 10. They might be running completely different events because they have such a skill set. Mm-hmm. So when you're working at that level where you've got these women who have so many different skills and they've been racing each other now, I just posted 2019 before, but some of these women have been racing each other since 2015 head-to-head like this. So we've got a long history of women operating at a very, very high level against each other with, but and they know they're in a special time. That's what it feels like to me. Like we're in the greatest era of, you know, maybe it's like when the Stones, the Beatles, Led Zepp, well, they weren't all playing exactly at the same time. But, you know, that early, late 60s, early 70s rock era where everyone saw each other as they were trying to sell the most records, but they were selling on the they were selling on top. They were selling with each other mm-hmm. because the music was so good. And so many people were fans of the style.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to buy this album or I'm going to buy that album. No, you're going to obviously buy both albums and compare them, right? And in the women, it feels much like that. Like, oh, man, this is just the greatest era of the 5 and the 10 that we've ever seen in women. It's just amazing. And you pick that up. So it makes me really happy that you see that and you can sense there's this vibe difference going on in these races that's really cool.
Yeah, I think the way that I think I came to this conclusion was specifically through the way that maybe Sifan Hassan races, and she races, she kind of sits in the pocket in the back of the race, typically it seems, mm-hmm. which is would be atypical of a men's race. You wouldn't see somebody come from the back to start the race. I don't think so.
Well,
I mean,
they
I mean,
do sometimes, but it's unusual. They do sometimes, but it's unusual to do it every time.
Right.
Because that's what
so it's weird,
does.
That's
she
her
does
style.
Every time.
But then you have Helen O'Beary kind of maintaining the maybe the 8K of pacing before that were to even happen. So you've got these two what seems to be leaders of the pack. Well, they're not always winning first, which is interesting too, because but you have it's their two styles that are kind of bookending the race. It seems in the ones that I watched, at least in the past few years, where they're bookending the race, and it's like, okay, the thing that really got me too was when I think it was in 2022 in Eugene, when was it in Eugene that Hassan she tripped?
No, that was at Budapest this year.
Oh, that
2023,
was this year. Yeah. So and she 10, just 000. Gets up and she starts laughing. It's like you can tell it wasn't like a I'm gonna go cry after this. She was just like, you know, whatever. Like that was fun. You know, it's interesting to just watch somebody have. There's a lot more fluidity in the kind of to me that was odd.
Yeah, and what was really cool about that, we'll break down these characters for our listeners in just a second, but since you opened up with this, Latensebgide, can never say her first name right.
She the one that won in the kick?
She's the one who won in the kick at Eugene, but yeah. she didn't win in this. She got beat by Sige, her teammate, and then Sifan would have won that race in mm-hmm. Budapest. She had it won.
Yeah.
She was trying to run four times. She was trying to run Gide off a little bit. She got a little cute.
You don't really see that either in the men's race. That was something subtle that I was like, man, she really was racing the other person, not racing. There wasn't like a weird
wasn't a blow up everybody. It was, I'm going to
yes.
beat this woman.
Yeah, it was
she's
weird.
She's the one I need to beat.
You know, and I keep saying weird because I don't have the words for it. I'm like, that, like, I didn't see many men when they're on the last 100 kind of looking four times at where the other position is.
No, usually they're tapped and holding.
Right.
And yeah. They're just staying in their line and hoping against hope that they make it there.
I don't know if that's
come to get them. Yeah, no, it's true. So, but that's Hassan's style too. Uh-huh. But anyway, when she tries to hold this woman off, she tries to hold Sagay off. But because she's trying so hard, she loses her footing a little bit and trips and falls. Mm-hmm. I think almost everyone would agree she was likely going to win that race.
Yeah.
But G'day ends up winning. And then the woman that they both beat is their teammate, G'day, mm-hmm. who won the year before in Eugene in the spectacular, no, 2 years before in a spectacular kick where nobody expected her to win. And it was really beautiful. Uh-huh. But G'day is this sweetheart and she walks back to Hassan.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And she comes up, and they're from different countries.
Yeah.
And she puts her arm around her, and they speak together.
Yeah.
And then she kisses her.
Yeah. I know.
And you're like, do you know G'day won the Sportsman of the Year for track and field because of that move?
Because you can sense it.
You just sense it. I already love G'day. She's like my favorite athlete out there. Sivan Hassan will go down in the record as the most talented and the most wide-ranging, but G'day has the biggest heart. And mm-hmm. and the way that she just came and, like, I just want her to win everything. I always want her to win everything. Mm-hmm. But again, just for interest of our listeners, G'day is the woman who basically ran Hellen Obiri at New York City Marathon this year, right to the edge. They were 15 seconds apart, 10 seconds apart. So these women are running at the 5K all the way up to the marathon and back. We know Sivan Hassan, she won, was it London a year ago, 2 years ago? Like, it's just like we're seeing, and she may run the 15 in Paris. We mm-hmm. don't know. Mm-hmm. She's the first person we're going to have who might actually be able to get Zatopek's 5:10 marathon or something like that, depending on what kind of craziness. And no one knows what to expect from what Hassan will do. But
who's Zatopek again?
Is that Emil Zatopek is the Czech.
That's the Czech guy who had the funky form.
Yes, and he won the 5, the 10, and then he ran the marathon. He didn't win the marathon, but he ran the marathon. No, he won the marathon. So he's the only one to ever do all of it. And it's like totally like never happened before, never gonna happen again. But I do think, I don't know that Hassan can win all of them because the level of play is so high in all these events. But we don't even know who's gonna be, this is what's so cool about this era of the women's sport in this event area. We don't even know who's gonna be on the starting line. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Paris, we're 100% sure for the men.
Yeah.
What the storylines are gonna be. We know the players, there's no doubt. But right now we don't even know who's going to get selected by their teams. It's like crazy. It's like so competitive and so high that it creates all this wonderful energy to me. That's like makes this particular event at this particular time the most savory and sweet. We're at the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. This is the greatest, some of the greatest performances we'll ever see, I think, are going to happen in Paris this summer.
Yeah, I
you get a sense of that at least? Do you get a sense of that at least?
I definitely do.
Yeah.
I think it's the energy between the men's and the women's races is just different.
And it's cool that we have those differences.
But they're equally as intense.
Yes.
So it's fascinating. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I can tell you that after watching after watching Hellen Obiri's last, you know, 16 or, you know, mile at the Boston Marathon, I'm like, what's she gonna be up to?
She'll be marathoning. I don't think there's any doubt that she's just gonna marathon. She might 10 marathon because I haven't looked at the schedule to see if it's possible. Mm-hmm. She hasn't been doing any 10K races.
Okay, so
whereas
you
Hassan
think that she'll
plays
just
up and down mm-hmm. the play, and G'day plays up and down the line. I think Obiri will go for the gold in the marathon only. But I don't think, and I think she's the favorite. She's now proven that she can beat women, anybody late in a race, regardless of the challenge of the course, what the course has to say. She's not the fastest at all, but she's the most, she can change gears late in a marathon, and that's a very hard thing to do. But I do think Gaudet is someone to be keep an eye on as potentially somebody who could compete with her. But I think at this point, if we think about the marathon, Obiri is almost assuredly going to be a single eventer in that space.
Okay.
I don't. She didn't run Budapest,
mm-hmm.
So she didn't, and she didn't. She stopped at the Olympics in 2020. And she didn't go to Eugene in 2022, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
No, she might have. No, she did. She got out kicked. But I don't. She didn't go to Budapest, so I got a feeling she won't be doing the 10.
Okay.
And they're so deep at Kenya that we're running into that situation there where their selection committee could say, hey, let's win. We don't need a double winner. You know, Kenya doesn't care if they have one athlete win two of golds. They just care that they win the gold.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
And Ethiopia's the same way.
Yeah.
They don't care if somebody wants to do that. They just want somebody to win the gold.
Yeah.
So they've got that, and they are selection-based committees. So they're, as we talked about in that last episode,
they're going to pick them
deliberately. They're going to pick them. They have events that they do, like we just, like Limu, who we just saw win at Boston. Somebody asked me, why did he do that? Why did he take such a huge risk in that race to get way out in front? For those who don't know, he went out at like, he was under 61 minutes at the halfway point in a marathon. That's happened like one time ever, and no one has ever held it. And no, and you cannot hold it at Boston. He went 60, 66.
Why do you think he did that then? I thought it was a personal vendetta that he just wanted to.
I think he needed to show, because he's older. He's been at this for a while, okay? And there's so many young Ethiopians who are Dudley at the 10 and the marathon and the half. And so I think he needed to show his selection committee that he was, not only did he have big balls, but he could finish.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be, almost without a doubt, he will be on the starting line for Ethiopia.
And that's why he did it. Yeah,
and
okay.
That's why he did it.
I get
he
you.
Needed
I
to
get
show
you.
Out in a really ballsy and incredible way that he, not only did he have the courage to do it, but he could sell it. And Ethiopia will likely see that. The Ethiopians are more samurai in their approach, and the Kenyans are more assassin in their approach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just different vibe. Like, or samurai versus ninja, right?
And that's
like,
probably based off of, I would imagine that is based off of the selection committee.
It's also cultural. There's a deep cultural construct of continuity and consistency within the Ethiopian culture. They've got a richer culture around, you know, the kingship and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Much of that got lost during many of those years of the colonial era for the Kenyans. And the Kenyans are kind of free range. They're more ninja-y. They're more like, I'm on my own, but I'm in a team. And they have a strong team element. They care, and they dislike greatly the Ethiopians. So you've got this Ethiopian contingent on the men's side that do not like the women. But on the women's side, on the women's side, though, they have a deeper respect for each other. But they still have the Ethiopians want to beat the Kenyans. You can watch, you might have watched in that race, especially in Budapest, where Gaudet was doing work, obviously, at the Olympics and at Budapest. At Budapest, she was doing work for Sige, right? She was doing work for the other woman. They were talking throughout the entirety of the race. You can see them communicating back and forth verbally to each other, playing the race out in such a way to guarantee, how did they, based on their strategy that they had with their coach and with the team, how are they going to keep Hassan from getting that gold?
Damn,
and they were changing gears, and they were doing different things, and they had a plan. And not always was you can tell that Gaudet is more of a free range, flowy kind of girl, and you can tell that Sige is like, no, boss said to do it this way, we're gonna do it this way. And Sige kept looking at her like, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm okay, I'll move up there. And but all this was all in planning, because they knew in a 10K race, they knew with 150 meters to go that who was going to be there. They knew who they were going to have to worry about. And everything came down. It's crazy. You run a 31 minute race, and it comes down to the last 15 seconds. But yet every portion of that race is important. Like, it's not like unimportant. You know, when we talked about, is there a redundancy in the 10K?
There is a marketing problem with the 10K.
There is a marketing problem. You can see that now.
I can feel it. Yeah. I can feel why they would
Right? People would see it that way. But if you've run the event competitively, you know they are different events.
Right.
And you just see it. And we'll be talking about it with the 5K, because when we get down to talking about the 5K, the woman moving up from the 15, Faith Kipyegon, the greatest miler in the history of the mile, men or female. I'm making that bold statement. She's the greatest miler we have ever seen in the history of the mile, both male and female, operating at the highest level. She's breaking the records, and she's moving up to the 5, and she won Budapest, but she barely won Budapest over Hassan. And again, Hassan is in both of these racing, making both these races happen. And she won London in the marathon. Like, it's like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
The women, this event for women is like crazy because of their range and what they're able to do.
What would you say is a nice shot target for your first, your 400 splits in kind of those first, you know, 5-10 minutes of the race?
Are
they
different?
Yeah. Is it around?
Well, some of it will have to do with weather conditions and who they're trying to run off. So if you've got a really hot day, mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll wait around and it'll be a little bit more like a 5K race on the women's side.
Mm-hmm.
In the 10, we're talking about the 10K, right?
Yes.
In the 5K, yes. It's a little different. But in the 10K, it's like there are contextual elements that will come into play on whether that will go hot from the start or if they'll sit around and wait a little bit. But most of it's weather. Most of it's like, are we going to shoot somebody we need in the foot who mm-hmm. we might need to carry some of this load by going out too fast?
Okay, yeah.
Right? So they may have a plan. The Kenyans or the Ethiopians might have a plan, and they're going to want to play. But they already know that no matter what, if Hassan is in the race, as you noted observantly, she's going to be in dead last.
Yeah. How important would you say are these? Okay, so one of the things that's running through my head, even... maybe this goes for the 5K and the 10K. Track versus road. What I'm putting myself into this position, and how important are the splits?
Not important. They're energetically... Okay, there's two questions here. Are splits important? Not very important. They're more important on the track.
The coach will be standing on the sideline being like, 75. You fucking
they're not worried. No. They're not worried about that. They're okay. Worried. They've got a plan because they've got a basic attack. They're going to say, especially the Ethiopians, because mm-hmm. the Ethiopians are controlling these races. You said Helen is controlling the race. She's really not.
Mm-hmm.
Helen, when she was doing her thing, she was sitting and allowing since 2019, the Ethiopian women are controlling everything. They're controlling the entirety of the course, and everybody else is responding to them.
Okay.
Everybody else is responding to them. Now, let's keep this clear. They're responding to the potential threat of Hassan. So they're trying to, you know, the Ethiopians are actually creating race structure strategy plans.
Hassan's never going to give her cards up until the end.
No. And she's going to show up. Sometimes she shows up earlier, like with a mile to go. Sometimes she shows up with 600 to go. Sometimes she shows up with 400 to go. Like, Sifan Hassan is the process... oriented racer par excellence. She just feels it in the moment and she does what she feels is right. Sifan Hassan has zero strategy.
Mm-hmm.
All she does is respond to what's happening and then lets the creative flow of the event come over her, which is why she's so exciting to watch. But she's less compelling to me than Gide, because Gide has to play within the construct and paint within the numbers of the Ethiopian system while still being super creative and flexible and fluid and ready to go. Whereas Sage, she's like kind of boring. She's kind of like a robot. Mm-hmm. She's really beautiful to watch. She's got some of the most... The Ethiopian women, by the way, I just want to say this. They are the most beautiful biomechanics you've ever seen in distance running. And they're different. All of them are a little bit different. But they run with such fluidity and grace and beauty. And the Kenyans run a little bit more choppy and more like by heart and like... hard. Anyway, we're going all over everywhere with this conversation, but it's cool. But we're going all over everywhere. Maybe we should set the state. Let me finish up your question you asked. Well, how important are the splits? The splits are only important to the strategy that the Ethiopians have put into place based on how fast they think they need to go to get the right players played out, to get the race to set up over the last K the way they want it to play out. And I think it takes 10,000 meters, 9,000 meters to do that. I think it's different race for the 5K than it is for the 10, but I understand why people would be confused and maybe thinking these are basically the same races being played out. Okay. I don't think they are. I think they're different because I think there's different energetic needs. There's different physiological needs that are going on, but I understand and sympathize with the people who think that the 10K might have a marketing problem and have a redundancy issue.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But let's go to the players. Okay. So in the women's 5 and 10, we've got the main players are Sifan Hassan. Sifan Hassan is, again, they're going to go back to this thing about the men and the women, but that this group, these two events are historically the same as they were with the men. The Ethiopians and the Kenyans have been in control of the leaderboards since forever. And for the women, it's since they started. So early in the 80s, there was one of the greatest practitioners of the art of distance running named Ingrid Christensen, who's a Norwegian, just a beautiful soul and an incredible racer. She was really successful in the marathon, but she was also successful in the 5 and the 10, held world records across all those different events. After she stepped off the stage, the Ethiopians and Kenyans took over en masse. And now it's completely controlled by East African athletes. We're starting to see on the women's side a little bit of that move that we saw on the men's side. We talked with Grant Fisher. We talked about how we're seeing some more of the American and Northern European and mix in there, but it is still a storyline of Kenya versus Ethiopia. Sure. Mm-hmm. And it's still a storyline with someone like Sifan Hassan. She's from Ethiopia. She was born in Ethiopia.
But then she went...
She moved. She is a Muslim. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't fit, and Ethiopia is very Christian. So she's in a minority sect. There's a lot of war going on in Ethiopia, and there's been a lot of sectarian challenges, lots of tribal challenges, lots of religious challenges in that part of the world. And she's of a tribe that it wasn't safe for her to say, so she and her family moved to the Netherlands. So she moved there when she was like 15 or 16, and she's competed all of her career for the Netherlands. But she is of Ethiopian descent. She was born in Ethiopia, and her parents are Ethiopian. So she is, will historically go down as the most wide-ranging and varied distance runner we have ever seen in the history of the sport. Because right now, as I said earlier, she could compete at the 1500 at the world level, at the Olympic level. She could win a gold medal, probably not a gold, but she could win a medal at the 15, and she could win a medal in the marathon. And there's no one on the stage that can do that. No one else. No one ever has ever been able to have that kind of range. What we're seeing in here is something that has never been seen in the sport of distance running ever.
But what about this Ingrid character in the 80s?
She couldn't do the 15 and the 3. She got her butt kicked when she ran the shorter distances. Sifan Hassan is like 100 meters to go. She's in it to win it in the 15, and she's in it to win it in the marathon. That is not Ingrid. Not even Ingrid could do that. No one has ever been able to do that. But also, mark this. Remember, prior to that, the women were not allowed to run the 5 and the 10.
What's her range? What's the shortest?
The 1500, which is 1 mile, basically.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So, okay.
And remember, the women were not allowed to run the beyond the 3K distance until 1986 or 80. 1988 was the first time the 10K came into the Olympic Games.
Gotcha.
So that some of that might be, maybe there had been somebody that could have done that, but not even the great Ingrid Christensen would anyone have thought would have been able to do that.
Sure.
So, and if anybody's interested in Ingrid Christensen.
It's like they're sending you one way or the other at that point.
If anybody's interested in Ingrid Christensen, you can go to the Running on Purpose podcast. About 3 years ago, me and another guy did a deep expose on the 1984 Olympic marathon, and Ingrid Christensen played a big part of that drama that went on in that race. So if you want to, and that's on YouTube and it's fun, and my co-host, Jeff Webb, and I did that, but I'll make sure that's in the show notes if anybody wants to go look at it. But currently, in the modern era, we've been looking at domination for a long time by the Ethiopians, primarily the Ethiopians, with the Kenyans getting a mix in there a little bit, but it's been basically controlled. For a long time, it was Tirunesh Dibaba, who you've heard me say is the babyface destroyer, the babyface killer. She's this, like, she just, in the early aughts, she just completely won everything and no one could compete with her. And then, you know, in the teens, we got a little bit of a mix of different folks, but now we're seeing at this point, the other players play out, and the other players are Letensebet Gidey, another woman. She's an Ethiopian. She is the one she's come up, from the junior ranks and didn't really want to run. She wanted to do other things, but she came up in the junior ranks. And now she's also she's the first one to jump up to the marathon. She was the first one to run the shorter distance and the marathon at the same race, and really has kind of galvanized a lot of people to thinking beyond the pale there. Mm-hmm. And she's got the world record at the 10K and at the half marathon. And she ran the fastest debut marathon in history at Valencia in 2022. And then she was second to Obiri after the World Championships in Budapest. She ran the New York City Marathon, and she was second to Helen Obiri in a very tight race where they ran together the whole way. And then Obiri just, this is why people, I think Obiri is really the favorite, because Obiri's now beaten a number of really high quality women in the last mile with a pretty devastating, withering wind up that looks like death warmed over on a cracker. I mean, it looks ugly.
Her elbows are over.
They're
head.
Everywhere. Yeah. They're everywhere. Shit ain't pretty, yeah. But it gets done. She gets it done.
I can't even imagine running like that. Like,
totally.
Oh, it's awesome.
Totally. The next player I want to highlight here is Helen Obiri, who we just talked about. Again, she ran the 5 and then the 10, and now she's marathoning. She's in this mix with these other women, and she in the early teens, you know, what I'm calling the teens, these 2014, 15, 16, 17, she was really a 15.5 girl. Then she just kept moving up, and she's gotten better and better and better as she's keep going, but she's always been at this world level. She's sort of the one who's...
What does that mean, 15.5 girl?
So that's 1,500 meter,
yeah,
and 5,000 meter specialist.
Oh, shit. That's what that... Okay.
And when we see... That's great. That's a great question. Yeah. I'm glad you asked it, because I just go through that immediately. That's what
I'm not hip on the nomenclature yet.
And these other girls are 5'10 girls,
yeah,
right?
It makes sense, but it's like, shit, this stuff, it goes in one ear and out the other so quick sometimes. I'm like, I'm picking up on it now.
Yeah, and that's why I say about Sifan Hassan is she's a 15, 5, 10, half... marathon girl. Yeah. It's like totally weird. Gide is a 5'10 half marathon, but really a 10 half marathon. Mm-hmm. Okay. Helen Obiri was 15.5, but then moved up, and she jettisoned the other events as opposed to...
She just kept going up.
She just kept moving up and not necessarily coming down.
Every couple of years, she would go do another one.
And not necessarily coming back down, which is the standard way of doing it. But it was Gide and Sifan Hassan who started jumping up and down and jumping up and down.
Is that a coaching style, or is that an interest of theirs?
I think
based off of like the natural talent that they've accumulated.
I think in Gide and Hassan, you're seeing two... process-oriented, creative play athletes who just don't want anybody to tell them what kind of painting they can make. They can make a mural, or they can make a self-portrait.
Yeah.
And they can do it equally well, and they don't want anybody to tell them what they can and can't do. That's definitely Sifan Hassan. She doesn't want anybody to tell her. And because she runs for the Netherlands, no one else in the Netherlands would even get close to her. So she can be on any starting line she wants to be on. She's not taking anybody's spot.
Yeah,
she's not stealing any. The Netherlands wants her to take all the spots she wants to take, because it's more chances for them to win a gold. See with Ethiopia, mm-hmm. it's like if Gide wants to move down to the 5K and she really wants to run the 5K, but they look and they say, yeah, but we've got girls moving up from the 1500. You're not going to be able to outkick them. So we're not even going to let you run in that event. We're going to keep you in the event that we want to keep you in.
Gotcha.
So Helen has moved up, and she's kind of moved out, but she's still relevant for this discussion because she was a major player in all the races that folks will watch in that. The next person is the one who's moved up. She was pretty much only a 5K, 1500 girl for a while. Her name is Gudaf Segay, and she is the quiet one, the one who follows basic. She pretty much follows what the Ethiopian committee wants. She's more of like the hired assassin, the one who's going to get the job done. But she's got better wheels than most of her teammates. She's got the only wheels that has been able to hold up consistently against Faith Kipyegon, against Helen Obiri, against her own teammates. She's like the one who has the greatest skill set But she hasn't moved up to the further distances. She's never run beyond 10,000 meters. And she only this year, only in Budapest in 2023, did she run the 10K. That was the first time she moved up. Before that, she was more of the 1,500 and 5K girl.
How big of a deal is that for the fans when they move up? So is that like a thing that people watch and they're kind of skeptical at first, or they're like, what's gonna, like, is that
certainly on the men's side? There's been really, this is a great question, because on the men's side, it's always been a part of the drama. But now with the change we're seeing, and all, why I'm saying we're seeing this brave new
it's
world,
more common.
It's not only common, it's like
it's expected. Yeah.
And that's why it's like, holy fucking shit. What we're seeing is something like, we've never seen before.
See, my relationship to that is like the Brownlee, you know, brothers in triathlon, yes, totally. Going from Olympic to all totally. The way to Ironman. And the drama surrounding that is profound.
Yes.
And so... I'm just imagining what happens to the track and field world when these players move.
That's a great analogy too. That's a great comparison too, because it's got the same, and it has the, in the men's, it has the same energetics, but in the women it's now, yeah, well, sorry, if you can't do that, if you aren't a Brownlee, then you're nobody, because everybody's Brownlees now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
everybody's
for sure.
capable of that. That's why I'm saying it's like really a shock, because it's like what only one or two people could do, now all of them are doing. And on the men's side, that hasn't translated yet, because they're still protecting the turf. They're mm-hmm. still peeing in the circle around their little
this
area.
Is my distance is still my doing thing.
That. Yeah. And there's a little bit of, that's where the 5K is so intriguing on the men's side.
But also, this
coming
is,
down and competing.
This why now this is a previous question, are men checking the splits more, and are they racing against the historical times of the splits, or are they racing each other?
The men's is a little bit this is a hot take, so I don't know that everyone would agree with my take on this, so I'm just gonna, but my take is what's still going on with the men is men, people are still trying to feel their way through post Mo Farah. So when Mo was in the 5 and the 10 from, you know, 2010 till 2016, he controlled the event. So he controlled it from about a K out to 2K out. He moved to the front and wouldn't let anybody else go around him, and everybody had to respond to Mo.
Yeah.
And the men's event is still trying to figure out who's going to take the race and how is the race going to play out.
Sure.
Joshua Cheptegei is sometimes taking that role and sort of falling mm-hmm. into that role to going to the front, but he other times lets the Ethiopians do it or lets a Kenyan do it. They're kind of playing back and forth in a unique and interesting way.
They're figuring out what to do. It's like a loose cannon.
And they're running fast because they don't want an American or a German or somebody who's got super crazy wheels who can't go under 27 minutes for 10K to sort of slip into the slipstream and maybe be where he's not supposed to be in the event.
Yeah,
right?
They're protecting lineage and history.
They run them off their wheel, but they're still responding, I think, to a post Mo Farah space. But I think we're starting to see some consistent storylines that might be interesting for us to cover in the coming weeks when we talk about it. But on the women's side, it's like, no, sorry, it's the Wild Wild West. It's a free-for-all. We don't even know who's going to be in the race, but these are the players.
That's cool.
So now Faith Kipyegon is a 15.5 girl. So she's the 1,500.5. She's, as I said, she's the greatest practitioner of the art of the mile or 1,500 that has ever been seen in the world. This last year, she broke the world record in the 5K, the world record in the 15 a couple times. She's won the world championships. Broke the world record in the 15 on the mile, she won by 100 meters. She was at the finish line before the other girls come off the turn, or as they're coming off the turn. It's like she's the greatest 1,500 meter runner the world has ever seen at any level. And now women, but Sifan Hassan could still beat her potentially if the race plays out in a more slow and consistent, like there's ways that she could win. There's ways that could happen, mm-hmm. but only in a championship race, not in a full straight out, go balls to the wall, make it happen kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Faith has not moved up to the 10. She's sitting in the 5K 15 pocket, but because we're talking about this as an adult dual event of 5K and 10K, mm-hmm. she's in play, because at Budapest, Faith Kipyegon barely beat Sifan Hassan. Sifan Hassan would have won the 10 and almost won the 5, but Faith Kipyegon was the only one who beat her. because Faith is just the greatest 1500 meter runner the world has ever seen. So I'm just setting that out as those are the main players. Now there's some American players too. The Americans are behind. We do have one or two women who have the potential to be there with a K to go, but we haven't seen women who yet are there, and they're there with 400 to go.
They're like Alicia, Grant Fisher without the kick.
They're like Grant Fisher was a couple years ago. They're not yet there with 100 to go.
Because he was newly developed.
He had to get to there. And they're starting to get there. And we've got Alicia Monson, who does not have the wheels, but she's got the engine to be with all those girls. And at Budapest, it was so cool.
How do you train that shit culturally then?
It's hard. That's why we're coming up. That's why. So there's a woman we have in the U.S. Her name is Elise Cranny. And She's the one we have in the U.S. who could do the 15 and the 10. But she loves the 15, and she doesn't really like the 10. And she just left the Schumacher group. She just left her coach, and she's now working with a new coach in a new environment who I think is going to let her run what she wants to run and do what she wants to do. So we're still curious as to what Elise is going to choose. But she's the only one I see who currently has the ability to be there and maybe to do something with 150 to go. Okay. I think Alicia and this other girl named Carissa Schweitzer could be there with 115 to go, with 150 to go, but I don't know that they have the skill set to make it happen. Because see, Alicia Munson's 1500 meter PR is 407. Elise Cranny's 1500 meter PR is like 357. Mm-hmm. She's 10 seconds faster in a 1500. But Alicia Monson is faster than Elise Cranny in the 10K because the engine matters so much. So we have these women in the U.S. who we might want to keep paying attention to and not disregard, but they're not like Grant Fisher, where I feel like somebody could take a flyer on one of them and say they'll medal. Mm-hmm. Whereas Grant Fisher, not only do I think he might medal, I think there's a potential that Grant Fisher could win the Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
It's not likely, but there's a chance. Where I don't think there's any way we could say that an American woman could win the 10 or the 5 could win an Olympic gold medal. Maybe sneak a medal like Kara did, you know, in 2012 or 2009. 2009, I think she did it. Who, by the way, was our last... like medalist. Molly Huddle, people might know that name. Mm-hmm. She's moved up to the marathon a little bit. She was the last great, but like the dominant 10K runner we've had. Emily Sisson has been a dominant 10K runner, but she hasn't been able to be competitive at the world level. She's moved up to the marathon now herself. What we're seeing is like, we still don't have that cultural thing happening in the U.S. level that we're seeing at the Ethiopian and Kenyan level.
Yeah, there's something that where they can turn those runners
but
into...
But I think it'll come. I think women, young girls who are watching it are saying, Elise Cranny's not my hero. Carissa Schweitzer's not my hero. Sifan Hassan's my hero. Latense Gidey is my hero. You know, Gudaf Sadgai is my hero. These women are my heroes because they're doing something that's never been done before. And you know, it just takes time with different cultures for those things to play out in the appropriate way.
I do think it's a lot of it's cultural too, because you know, it's a mindset going into a 3-4 year build into something like this. Because even when I was growing up, it was, you didn't have to know anything about running to know that the Kenyans and the Ethiopians were dominant. You just knew that. It was like, well, you're never gonna beat cultures that run fast, you know, faster than us. So I'm sure that played out. And you know, when you're on top, it's easy to kind of keep that momentum going. And I bet it has a lot to do with practice and, you know, seasonality and coaching styles and all that great stuff. So it's,
but you're also putting your finger on something that's really important, which is mindset.
Yeah.
And cultural mindsets are slow to change, but they do. And we're seeing that, and I think we'll see it in the U.S. It'll just take a little longer because it takes a while to break out of those mindsets. Someone's going to... That's why I think Elise Cranny is a very important person for American distance running, because she's the one who has the skills, but will she step into the role? Will she be a hero? Or is she just going to do what she wants to do? Which is... there's nothing... I mean, it's her prerogative to do what she wants. But she has a chance to do something that I don't see anybody else who has the wheel. Carissa Schweitzer can run a 4-minute 1500, but she doesn't have the punchy years that I think it will take. You watch those races.
Mm-hmm.
You see what's going on over that last 150 meters. Mm-hmm. They are in full flight. They are 100% sprinting, and it is a full sprint to the finish line with everything they have, and they're also judging each other just a little bit to figure out how to game it in case somebody makes another move. Can they make another move? It's like chess, speed chess at the highest level, making slight little moves to see what can happen. And it's like you'd have to be able to run 29:15 for a 10K to have the gears. And, you know, Elise Cranny can't run 30:30. So it's really hard when your competitors are a minute faster than you are in talent to be able to do that. And we're just not quite there yet. It's going to take a little while. But the mindset's important around
it. A lot of it seems to be what happens off. You know, this is going to be hard to articulate, and I hope it doesn't come out in a way that is just, like, messy. But, I mean... I don't even know if I can articulate it. It's from a cultural standpoint. It's like when I can imagine that when you get off the track and you're a collegiate athlete or something, men or women, whatever. It's you get off the track and in the US you're thinking about a lot of things.
Social media,
boyfriend, what you're gonna eat that night, yeah, and all that crap. But when it seems like when you're backed by a nation to do the best, you get off the track
and they're telling
you what
to do.
Your legs.
You're not doing anything. You're not choosing anything. It's being chosen for you.
And I even think that culturally, maybe even in the US, we are promoting we're trying to promote this idea of like a well-roundedness that's like, don't forget your study. Like all this stuff that's, I don't know if that sounds wrong to you.
No, it's 100% accurate. But you're nailing it.
But when you go into a race, it's so important to know that not only is the talent there, but you're preparing mentally 24/7 for about 15 seconds, 6 months into the future.
Correct.
So that, I do think that there's maybe a lot there.
A lot there. There's a lot.
There's pros and cons to everything, but I mean it's there is something that is more fierce about the dynamic of the front pack than there is,
and the drama. So Americans are always going to be on the outside looking in. They're going to be on the outside looking in for a while,
sure.
Whereas the Ethiopians and the Kenyans are right at it, right together, battling, and we just happen to have one or two. Now, just for the sake of interest. There is
high school football's not that way.
No.
You see what I'm saying? Yep. Like high school football, that's 24/7.
Yep. 24/7.
And you know, it would be hard to beat in high school football. I challenge anybody to the world. And I do think a lot of that is cultural. I don't think the talent pool would be any different.
Correct. Yeah. I agree with you. I think this is what I call mindset.
Yeah.
There's a mindset around it that's essential.
Sorry for the tangent. No, it was beautiful.
I think it's
a syllabus here.
No, we're done. I'm kind of done with the overall syllabus. I just wanted to line out the players so that people could get an idea of that. So now what I would suggest people do is go through and watch the races. And now that we've sort of set the stage for who these players are, a little bit of cultural context, a little bit of storyline, my favorites, your interests, I think it'd be good for people to then consume the content, right? Watch the races, see what they think. Get, and then if they want to reach out to us and give us ideas, let us know. We'll talk about anything. But coming up soon, we still have the 15s to do, men's 15.5, and we're going to do the women's 15.5, then we'll do the 8 by itself. But we do, this week, have Diamond League starting up.
Oh, the Diamond League. That's so, my favorite.
And and 3 weeks ago, when we recorded our last, by the way...
Did y'all know... That the
you love
that
this.
The Prefontaine Classic is the only Diamond League race in the USA. That one goes out to my friend Katie.
Yeah. So the other thing I was gonna say is we recorded the 10K episode a couple of weeks ago. I got sick. You can probably still hear it in my voice. And I've been out for a little while. We haven't recorded in a while, but we did just have the World Cross Country Championships just happened. And we talked about that because it was going to happen the weekend before. What happened in those races, really didn't have anything much to do with what we're going to be seeing, I think, at, at the Olympics, but all the players that were many of the players that we're talking about from the 5K and 10K perspective, they raced there. If somebody wants to go watch that, I'll make sure that's also in the show notes because that happened recently. So that might be interesting for something instead of looking at the real past, like a year ago or 9 months ago. This is something that just happened recently that is going to play out. The players that are going to be playing in the field showed up, especially on the men's side. Cheptegei from Uganda, Kiplimo from Uganda, who ended up winning, and then Aragawe, who we'll be talking a lot about on the Ethiopian side because of the way he runs and the crazy way that he competes. He showed up at the World Championships, and it was an epic race on the men's side. On the women's race, it was like total and complete and utter Kenyan domination to the point at which it was like almost like boring to watch, except it was like poetry in motion. You had six women from Kenya literally control the race to a level that I've never seen anything like it before. It's a textbook on how to destroy other countries in cross country. But that's not really relevant to the Olympics. But there are all the players that we're talking about are kind of in the mix there. But this weekend, we've got Diamond League starting up. So we're going to start talking a little bit about each week that we get a chance to. We're going to start by bringing in
current
what
events.
Just happened, the races. And I think that'll create the kind of excitement that people will want to get behind. And we may not have as many... we're going to continue with our other topical discussions. Michael races in 2 weeks, and then we've got... in a week, we've got other topics you and I have been wanting to talk about. We're going to keep those going, but we're going to kind of running rogue it like we did back in the day and leave a little window of 10 or 15 minutes of pre-Paris talk to try about what happened in the world of distance running this last week or these last 2 weeks that we want to talk about that are going to play out with Paris so that we're constantly setting it up so that we can have fun during... Olympic weeks that are going on and really I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I think that's what I'm hopeful of.
I'm about as dumb as a bag of hammers when it comes to this stuff. So
but you're figuring it out quick.
So you're gonna be all right when you're listening. You're gonna be all right.
There is one topical inflammatory thing I want to discuss around Olympics and Diamond League especially. Okay. This last week, it was announced throughout the world that the World Athletics, which is the governing body for track and field, has signed a contract. No, sorry. Not World Athletics. They're separate. The Diamond League events signed a contract, gave up the contract with NBC and Peacock. And if you're going to watch track and field, at least at the Diamond League level, not this year, but next year, this year is going to finish with NBC and Peacock. Guess who got the rights?
Flow track. That's badass.
The sport of track and field to a person is this is bullshit. They hate it.
Wait up. Help me understand that.
This is because one of the things that makes flow track so contentious
is the $50 service fee.
Correct.
And they don't give you the free preview for 30 days.
Nope.
That's when you got it.
It'll show up. The one thing about what's great about Flow Track, it'll show up 10 minutes later on YouTube. But if you're going to want to watch it, like real fans do.
You're
going to have to pay them.
I'm guessing.
That's not for the world. That's not for the Olympics. It's not for the World Championships. Those will still be distributed in the way that they're distributed. But the Diamond League events themselves. And the worry here is, and I share this worry, I don't see it as the worst thing ever, okay? Because I don't think we have very great, I think the sport needs a shakeup. We've been talking about that. And I think Flow Track might provide a little bit of a shakeup. My worry is that the Diamond League suffers and that the sport of track and field suffers because people don't want
to
watch
the barrier of entry to go into it.
Correct.
Yeah, equal parts. I'm like, badass for Flow Track for landing that.
Correct.
But also, that barrier of entry from Joe like myself is there is some...
You're not going to stumble on it on TV, first of all, right? You're not going to stumble across it on TV.
You're not going to see TV televise it or advertise it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it creates opportunities. Other chances, maybe something beneficial comes from it. I don't know. I do think, you know, I'm a chaos person. You know me, I love chaos. So to me, it's like, it's good for the sport. And this, let's just talk turkey. Not that many people watch a Diamond League anyway. Lots of people watch the World Championships. A lot of people watch the Olympic Trials. People will not be, not a lot of people. You have to be a super fan. So it kind of makes sense to be at Flow Track because, you know, I'll probably pay for Flow Track. Why? Because I want to support the sport of track and field. And for me to spend $50 or whatever it is, I'll spend $116 and buy it for a year or whatever because I'll support the sport.
But it's just Flow a little Tracks steep is not, for somebody who wants to watch.
But I'm a super fan, correct?
Yeah, have to be a super fan.
And I don't do Flow Track because Flow Track covers shit I don't care about.
It's like $600 a year to keep it going around unless you want it.
Especially when it shows up on Flow. I mean, Flow Track basically posts their events 12 to 24 hours later on YouTube. So it's kind of like, why the fuck would you spend the money on Flow Track? Like, I still I don't care about the Diamond League so much. I just put a moratorium with my friends who I care about the sport with and like, no spoilers. Don't tell me what happened because I'm going to watch it on YouTube. But I probably won't. This year, next year, I'll probably buy Flow Track so that I've got, so I can watch it in real time when I want to watch it in real time. And to me, $600, that's a big threshold, but I'm privileged. I've got the ability and it supports the sport. But I do think it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I'm doubtful that contract will go more than a year or 2 years or whatever the current contract is. I bet it ends up shifting. But
they'll probably run a promotion if they want to start getting... If the goal... It depends on what their goal is.
Correct.
It's like, is it to make
yeah,
the
we
money,
haven't heard anything
the revenue,
back.
Or is it to build... To grow the fan
and we
base.
Haven't heard anything from Flow Track around the outside of the announcement.
Oh, really?
So it could be. Well, I haven't been paying that close attention. I was just paying attention. I think that they kept a little bit quiet because the reaction was so... I mean, it was ugly.
Really?
It was ugly, and it was.
It seems like they would be the proper owners of the
from
the broadcast.
From the hundred to the discus, from the marathon to the 1500, panned across the board by every athlete, every single athlete competing at the level, because they know it's going to be harder for their fans to watch them in real time doing what they're doing.
They got to watch tell their families.
Correct.
Hey, cousin. Who doesn't really know about track and field that much.
And maybe doesn't have the resources.
I hear hanging out with Michael over there, and he doesn't know shit either. Y'all want to go spend, y'all should split the cost.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, now, of course, there's all these ways to, you know, bypass. And if you have VPN, if you play the VPN game, you know, you can still watch Diamond League on BBC and everything else. And you know, I'm already do VPN, so I'm probably going to go VPN route. I like BBC's coverage anyway better, you know. So those people who are wondering what I'm talking about, you know, you... The way the modern internet world works now, because of TV rights, their TV rights and everything are controlled by where you're watching from. But the internet is a brave new world now where you can say you're watching from wherever you want to be watching with a couple of clicks and a couple of bucks. And so you can watch almost anybody's feed for free if you know how to play the VPN game. It's just using these proxies to say your location. So Austin, Texas, I'm watching, but it says I'm watching from London, England. And I can watch exactly what's being shown for free in London, England.
On the BBC.
On the BBC, at my home, on my television.
Why are they crushing it? Why are they kind of communalizing?
Because their sport cares. So their country cares about the sport.
Yeah, that's the difference, man.
And they have great commentators, especially in the distances. They wipe our... I mean, like I said, Kara, last time we talked about Kara, Kara's doing a really good job. And you know, NBC's coverage and Peacock's coverage recently has gotten really good. We've got Trey Hardy, local guy who, you know, he's not from here originally, but he went to UT and, you know, he's a great decathlete. He's the decathlon commentator. He's phenomenal. He does a great job of it. Kara's doing a great job. They've got the greatest sprint commentator in history in Otto Bolden on there. He's the greatest. So it's a really good coverage.
Here's my idea. I'm going to end with this.
Okay, go ahead.
So USATF.
Yep.
If we could somehow light a fire under that.
Yeah, good luck.
They got to collect. All right, where are they going to get the funds? They need to pay the contract money to Flow Track to make the production.
Yep.
That needs to be paid through by somewhere. Where would the upflow come? All right, I'll let you handle the upflows of where the USATF is going to get the dough. But they need to be paying FloTrack. FloTrack needs to put on a perfect performance and production. They need to get Kara and all the great.
You're arguing for competition. Is what you're arguing for.
Well, right? I'm saying
accountability and competition.
Keep paying for it. Let the private contractors be paid, but let the kind of arbiters of the sport kind of figure out a way to cash flow it. That would be cool.
Well, that's what I think that's in their mission, but that's why I'm so disappointed and why many of us who are track fans in America are kind of hopeless. We just don't.
So you kind of, you play what the BBC is doing, but you simulate that through private conduits of the powers that be plus the private contract.
The American way, the way we do things. But USATF still perceives that we don't have an inferior product. This is really my issue. I think the USATF believes the story that America can't get with track and field. And they've got the history behind them that they haven't. But that's, again, going back to our conversation a couple weeks ago, that's because we told the wrong stories. Because we told the stories just every 4 years and we focused on the athlete and not the event, right? Those themes. And if we had done it, but that doesn't mean we can't change it now. It doesn't mean we can't start doing or making up the rules again and creating. This is what innovation and there's an opportunity here.
Yeah.
There's a huge opportunity, and you're putting your finger on it. There's a huge opportunity here. And guess what, Michael? If the sport's worth it, and it's getting better and better, so it'll show up. There's just people like me who have been at this for a long time who don't have a lot of hope in the USATF. So it's kind of like maybe there's another place we need to be looking for. I don't think it's FloTrack, but that's where the chaos and this sort of is kind of good. It's like, well, let's see. Maybe there is another way. Maybe there's something else. You know, the thing about FloTrack that's so exciting is FloTrack is funded by kids and parents because they want to see their athletes' events. So it's so much more. The parents will pay the premium because they want their kids to be able to watch all the events, and they show so many more events, and there's so much on there that there's like it's more of the everyday world. So if FloTrack could tap into that in some way to create a greater product, I just don't. And I think that I do think that there's going to need to be a step up in production value from FloTrack. I think there's going to need to be a step up in.
It's a great brand, great name, great everything. You know, it's
and they're
like,
good people. I know them all. They're all they're all friends
everybody
of mine.
I've met.
They're friends of mine. I know
been
them
very
personally.
Ephemeral, every fleeting, every single kind of.
And they're growing and growing and growing. And the one challenge with FloTrack right now is they're growing so fast, and they've been growing so fast. That they've gone into all the sports. Mm-hmm. They're in so many different sports now. But I do think that there's real opportunity there. That's why I'm not against the move as long as for Diamond League. If they had made this move and it was the Olympics, well, first of all, there's no way that FloTrack could have afforded it. Mm-hmm. Because basically what happens is NBC stepped down. NBC did not step up to the table. And likely what happened was Diamond League said, well, let's try another route. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know that's a lot of that stuff's boardroom stuff.
I'll call my guys over at the Diamond League. Well, I gotta figure out who's on the phone.
Yeah, if I called my guys over at FloTrack, they wouldn't tell me.
Would they be mad if they made a polo shirt that said Diamond League on it? Because I just like the idea of this thing.
You're obsessed with it.
I want to know the person.
Oh, by the way, the one event that FloTrack did not get from Diamond League.
Let me guess.
You announced it. You said, what? By the way, it's your shtick.
What's that?
By the way.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. They didn't get the Prefontaine Classic?
They did not
come
get
on,
no.
Oh, man. You snooze, you lose. Who got that?
I don't know.
I'm going to get the Prefontaine. I'm going to bring my camera.
I think NBC may have kept it.
Y'all
I think
call
NBC,
me.
NBC kept it. It's probably the one event that they know of that they get big
NBC
revenue
knows
from.
What they're doing.
Oh, that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, they do.
That's awesome.
They've been in the TV game for a long time.
Yeah.
The media rights game for a very long time.
Nike wouldn't have it.
No.
They're like, you know what? We like NBC.
Now you're knowing who's pulling the strings.
I get it now. I'm coming for all you track and field bozos out there.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, for listening, man. We love doing this. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as you did the other one. And next time we hit you up, we'll hit you up with the men's 15 fives, and then we'll go down to the women's 15, and we'll see where we go. So thanks for listening. We love you guys. Godspeed. And if you have anything you want to share with us, you want to tell us how we're doing, Sisson@telosrunning.com, or just post it as a review or a thumbs up or a like or a happy face or whatever floats your boat. Godspeed, y'all. Godspeed.